Good day, everybody, and welcome to the initial first draw of the Blood Club. Many of you may be wondering what the Blood Club is. So what is the purpose of the Blood Club? Well, one could imagine that blood could mean many different topics. But the purpose of the Blood Club is really to dive deep into talking about hematologic malignancies. We're going to go in and we're going to discuss issues that are going across the country, whether or not it's in the clinic, from the patient perspective, from drug development. But we're also going to try to tackle, you know, that area where clinical trials are being done, but how do we get those drugs from the clinical trials and utilize them in the clinic? We're also not going to steer clear of any controversial topics that are being raised up by the hematologic malignancy community, and really look into some of the global meetings and try and highlight some of the data that we feel will be immediately impactful. So who's going to come on the Blood Club? Who can be a member of the Blood Club? Well, for the first inaugural episode, it's going to be me, myself, and I. But other guests may in the future be bench scientists who are doing groundbreaking research in the area of hematologic malignancies, all the way to the global leads of randomized phase 3 trials that are going to revolutionize the treatment of hematologic malignancies. But we're not going to stop there. We're going to go into the academic world, into the underground, and potentially ask some tough questions. We're going to be able to stay above ground, and we're going to be able to talk about what's practically happening in the clinic. But then I also want to be able to go into the community and really see if there's a difference between academic management of blood cancers and the community management of blood cancers, and how we can mend that or build a better bridge in the management of patients with heme malignancies. So again, for the first dose of the Blood Club, what we're going to do today is I'm going to reflect upon the 2022 Pan-Pacific Lymphoma Conference that was held July 18th to the 22nd at the Grand Hyatt in Kauai. Dr. James Armitage, Drs. Julie Vose, and myself were the co-organizers of this meeting. We had over 400 in-person attendees. We had faculty from many different institutions across the United States and Canada. We had and we outsold our virtual membership to the point where we had to shut it down because we ran out of server space. And it was just a fantastic meeting to try to pull off. And I think we did successfully in the midst of what's going on out there with the pandemic. So to kind of lean into the agenda and just provide some highlights out there for those who are considering being Return Blood Club members, we'll start off with what Monday at the Pan-Pacific Lymphoma Conference was. This is a unique day in the Pan-Pacific Lymphoma Conference. It's had evolution over time. But really, this is a day where I look to set the agenda on some of those issues that arise quite commonly, but maybe taboo subjects or subjects that you turn to the textbook for because you're too embarrassed to ask. So we really started off with prophylactic medications in the management of patients with hematologic malignancies, those getting treated with cellular therapy or autologous stem cell transplant. Dr. Zimmer did a nice in-depth approach on when to use prophylactic antifungals, antivirals, antibacterials, and really tackled the up-to-date data on using COVID-related vaccinations as well as monoclonal antibodies. We then transitioned to Dr. Kepsel, who went through looking at, you know, thrombocytopenia, something that is quite common in the transplant space when patients' platelets don't rise. And what is the workup and how do you manage those patients to avoid catastrophic bleeding? Dr. Mattia then gave a nice talk on really, should we be dose reducing certain drugs for certain comorbidities and whether or not those comorbidities are lymphoma related or not lymphoma related, really should weigh heavily on whether or not you dose reduce some of our chemotherapeutic agents. Then Dr. Kroll and Dr. Cradaville gave excellent talks on work-life balance, mental health in the workforce, which I think we've heard a lot about burnout I just heard terms of absenteeism and presenteeism that is running rampant through our workforce. And how do we as a healthcare environment battle against said issues? Turning the page to Tuesday, we then brought in our expert bench scientists, as well as our pathologists, kind of talk to us about where the field's going in regards to lymphomagenesis. What are some difficult cases in the pathological realm as the WHO makes new subcategories and continues to split the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma pie even smaller and smaller? And then look at radiographic measures that are coming to assess not only what the staging is, but what's the interim response and then the end of treatment response based upon radiographic measures going beyond the PET CT. And then Dr. Kurtz talked to us about his ongoing research and ongoing research with his colleagues around minimal residual disease assessment, cell-free DNA, and new technologies that continue to emerge. We then rolled into the next section about choosing emerging therapies or initial therapies in several different diseases. Dr. Moskowitz went through early stage Hodgkin's lymphoma, really a monumental paradigm shift where we went from a uniformly deadly disease of Hodgkin's lymphoma to now almost curing everybody. And once you get to the pinnacle or to the top of the mountain in the management of Hodgkin's lymphoma, then how do we very wisely start to remove therapies and still cure the vast majority of those patients? Dr. Lacase then stepped to the stage and talked about advanced stage Hodgkin's lymphoma and really highlighted the most recent update of the Echelon 1 data showing an overall survival advantage with BV-AVD in those patients with advanced stage classical Hodgkin's lymphoma, but then really dug deep into what's needed in order to give this therapy effectively, efficiently, and without toxicity or with minimizing the toxicity of BV-AVD. Dr. Callum then stepped to the stage and talked about primary CNS lymphoma, often a scenario that presents at Friday at 5 o'clock, and how do you manage those patients? It's really great to see this topic be at the podium because it is one that nags at a lot of lymphoma doctors, and many different people are needing to be involved in the management of those patients because of how they present. Dr. Mehta Shah then stepped up and talked to us about what's coming with peripheral T-cell lymphoma, you know, a disease which still needs therapy to improve outcomes. We know about the Echelon 2 data showing that BV CHIP in those expressing CD30 does show an overall survival advantage compared to CHOP. But really, we're still struggling in figuring out who to transplant, what subtypes to transplant, and really looking at those subtype analyses, you know, who should we still not be giving BV CHIP to? And perhaps CHOP or CHOEP are reasonable options. So those topics were tackled by Dr. Mehta Shah in a very eloquently done fashion. We then jumped to the oldest B cell, which was our plasma cell dyscrasias. And Dr. Shah gave an excellent talk on what I call monoclonal gammopathies of significance. That can be smoldering myeloma and whether or not to treat them or not treat them, but also looking at monoclonal gammopathies of renal significance or neurologic significance, those consults, which often are head scratchers in our clinics. And then Dr. Dispenzeri got up and talked about a very complex topic, which is the management and evaluation of light chain amyloidosis, a diagnosis that almost uniformly will be missed if it is not on your differential. The sun set and the sun rose again on Wednesday, where we had an interesting new topic, which was, why did you do that? This category was one that kind of came to me in the setting of a lymphoma tumor board. Often we see cases and we try to figure out from the literature or from the notes that we are sent or that we review, and we're scratching our heads. We weren't there. But why did they do that? Or when you're presenting a case, your colleagues may ask you, why did you do that? And so really this session was about putting two lymphoma experts on the stage and tackling issues that were top of mind to many investigators and many clinicians across the world. The first topic was primary refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, done by Dr. Sen and Dr. Weston, really trying to carve out how do we identify those patients that are less likely to derive benefit from our curative intent therapies like dose-adjusted EPOCR and R-CHOP, and who we should be maybe deviating to CAR T-cell therapy based upon the ZUMA-12 data. Again, non-randomized data, but interesting data. We then brought to the stage Dr. Karen Jacobson and Dr. Fred Locke, who gave a discussion about how they use bridging to CAR T-cell therapy. In my mind, I've always broken up CAR T-cell bridging into two different categories. What I call the brain to vein time, which is when I want to do a CAR T-cell and the patient wants to do a CAR T-cell and the institution and the family is ready to do a CAR T-cell, but we're slowed down by insurance approvals, single case agreements, chair time to apheresis. So there's that whole area where there's a dearth of data and a dearth of information on how to guide the clinician. And then the classically studied bridging therapy occurs in the vein-to-vein time, which is after apheresis and then with reinfusion of the CAR T cells. So how do you manage those two different spaces? And how do you realize that the true Achilles heel of CAR T cell right now likely lives in that brain to vein time? And that's the true intent to CAR population that we're trying to be impactful on. This topic was eloquently discussed by Dr. Locke and Dr. Jacobson and gave several highlights to our attendees. We then moved into a very entertaining session by Dr. Abramson and Dr. Brody talking about the ineligible DLBCL for autologous stem cell transplant and what does that patient look like? Because it seems right now to live in the ether and people use age, people use comorbidities to state that they are not transplant eligible, but are they CAR T-cell eligible? And I think that was a great session looking at the pilot data with lysocaptagene maraleucel in those patients with comorbidities, the majority being over the age of 70. It was referenced that there was a patient given non-curative intent therapy initially for their large cell lymphoma that then went on to arguably curative intent therapy when their lymphoma relapsed. Is this going to become commonplace in those patients with advanced age and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma? I think that may be a topic for future discussion. We then moved into mantle cell lymphoma and first complete remission with discussions by Dr. Call and Dr. Vose. What do you do? Do you use rituximab maintenance? Do you go to transplant? And I think that remains a topic of debate. Transplant ineligible classical Hodgkin's lymphoma was the next topic by Dr. Moskowitz and Dr. Advani, where they bantered back and forth about cases on when they would use rituximab vedotin, when they would use checkpoint inhibitors, when they may forgo autologous stem cell transplant in this highly curable disease. And lastly was follicular lymphoma and marginal zone lymphoma during the COVID-19 period by Dr. Leonard and Dr. Nasbill. This was a great session going back and forth about how COVID has impacted what we classically think is an incurable disease. Are we waiting longer to treat patients? Are we holding back monoclonal antibodies in this time period? And now that we have arguably more therapies against COVID-19 than we do against influenza, are we going to start to revert back to our normal practices as we see that COVID-19 isn't going away and that other infectious agents are going to continue to pop up or pox up along the way? We then heard two great sessions by two awardees, the first one being Alex Herrera, who is awarded the James Armitage Lymphoma Clinical Investigator Award. And with this award, he leaned into not only his personal life, some of the struggles during his career, but also how he emerged from those struggles to continue to be one of the lead and up-and-coming investigators in lymphoid malignancy, followed by Dr. Bruce Chesson receiving the Ollie Press Memorial Award and giving a lecture on just the history of the response criteria known as the Chesson criteria, subsequently the Lugano criteria, and now, as he addressed to the audience, the next version of the Lugano criteria is planned to be discussed at the 2023 ICML conference. And wouldn't we all like to be a fly on that wall? Moving into Thursday's agenda, we moved into the tough calls in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I thought that this was a great exercise where we put three expert lymphoma physicians behind a curtain. We gave them a microphone, which altered their voice, and we put on noise-canceling headphones. We asked them all the same case, and we saw them go in many different directions. And what was interesting is after 25 minutes of kind of weaving through a case of Flicker lymphoma and mantle cell lymphoma, we brought those masked speakers out and let the audience try and discern who managed each case. And really, in some cases, the audience couldn't tell who was the Hamburglar, who was Grimace, and who was, it wasn't Oscar the Grouch, but we had Sesame Street characters and we had McDonald's characters, you know, for that. And I think that this was a great challenge for this faculty, but also a fun adventure for those in attendance, because it really showed that even lymphoma experts may choose management differently in tough lymphoma cases. We then moved on to great debates where we looked at when to transplant in the CD30 expressing PTCL after BV CHIP by Dr. Horowitz and Dr. Zane. I think in the end, if you live in North America, you're likely to try and consolidate those patients with autologous stem cell transplant or high-dose therapy and autologous stem cell rescue. But if you're outside North America, you may choose not to. And based upon some of the data presented by Carrie Savage, there appears to be a PFS advantage in an unplanned analysis. But what are the barriers outside of North America to utilizing this data? They did a great job trying to answer that question. The next was autologous stem cell transplant for large cell lymphoma by Dr. Abramson and Dr. Sauter. Dr. Sauter leaned in very nicely to provide a base. And then Dr. Abramson brought in a curveball all the way back from the 1980s by entertaining the audience with why transplant is out of style, especially in those patients who have early relapsed or primary refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, based upon the Transform as well as the ZUMA-7 data. One of the surprise presentations of Pan Pacific, in my opinion, was the CAR T-cell for indolent non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, where Dr. Jacobson gave an eloquent presentation about why CAR T-cell is relevant, especially in follicular lymphoma. And then Dr. Locke stood up and gave a very impactful presentation about his family's dealings with indolent non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and just showing that in that space, it is an individual decision that goes beyond the data. Very impactful presentation. We then moved to questionable queries, and Dr. Davids gave us his approach to the management of Richter's transformation and how it's not one size fits all in regards to the management of this uncommon situation, but a situation that you must be mindful of because it will change your management and it does change the prognosis of those patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. Dr. Mato then gave an impactful talk, a lessons learned in the management and the treatment of CLL in the upfront setting, and trying to answer the questions, just how many drugs do we need in first line CLL? A very interesting presentation, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness that he gave to that topic. We then heard a talk by Dr. Zelenitz trying to get at how the heck are we going to sequence therapies, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, whether or not there's bispecific antibodies, CAR T-cell antibody drug conjugates, all trying to tackle the same antigen. How do we get these drugs to be allies in the management of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma patients rather than being adversarial in the management of these patients? And he did a great job walking through the data, what's coming, and potentially how to sequence them. Next, Tysel Phillips from the University of Michigan gave a great talk on how do we treat or should we be treating TP53 mutation and mantle cell lymphoma differently, looking at just how this is a poor risk population, but what are the coming therapies, not only with BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitors in mantle cell lymphoma, and how should we change our brains when we're seeing these patients? But the hallmark discussion was, you don't know if they have TP53 mutation if you don't check for them having a TP53 mutation. So I think that that left an indelible mark on the audience in mantle cell lymphoma. And then lastly, Dr. Rich Fisher got up and really talked about POD24, where it came from, what it initially meant, and where it's gone in the literature, both prospectively and retrospectively, and infiltrated beyond follicular lymphoma into the mantle cell lymphoma space. And how do we use this as subsets in the prospective analysis of patients getting treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphomas like follicular lymphoma and mantle cell lymphoma? And then we turned to Friday, where we talked about orphan diseases, and Dr. Mukherjee gave an excellent talk on the complexities of Castleman's disease and just truly how the inflammatory state of this disease is impactful to the comorbidities of the disease. We then heard from Dr. Weisong, a dermatologist's approach to early stage mycosis fungoides, where adjunctive measures like topical steroids, light therapy can be used and when it is to be used and when to adjunctively use it when we're moving to systemic therapies. Great pictures to help really discern how difficult MF can look on the patient's skin and be masquerading as things like psoriasis for years. Then Dr. Gabriel got up and talked about how to treat a Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, another B-cell malignancy of lymphoplasmacytic like cells that you'll see in the bone marrow or in circulating in the blood with a concurrent IgM paraprotein. And what are the new therapies that are coming down the pike for this rare disease? Dr. Bocek gave a nice talk on when and how to treat localized extramarginal zone lymphoma. Where's the role for radiation alone? When do you use systemic therapy? And what is the chances of this disease coming back? And lastly in the session was really Dr. Horowitz giving a talk on a spectrum disease called lymphomatoid papulosis, commonly on the PATH report as a CD30 positive lymphoproliferative disease, which isn't really a cancer at all if these lesions come and go without any treatment, but can be disfiguring. And how do you use therapies that are gentle enough to not impact quality of life, but preserve the quality of life of the patient, and also not miss these diseases masquerading as primary cutaneous anaplastic large cell lymphoma or a manifestation of systemic ALCL. And then the last was top prospects, where we heard from Dr. D'Angelo, many things coming in headless CAR T cells and many different areas in the cellular therapy realm in DLBCL. We heard Dr. Friedberg reflect upon how therapies have come in follicular lymphoma and how to be impactful in a disease which has a very broad natural history. Dr. Ansel got up and talked about new therapies in Hodgkin's lymphoma and how do we continue to engage our own immune system to fight against Hodgkin's lymphoma. Dr. Mehta Shah gave featured therapies on T-cell lymphomas, how we can use the drugs that we already have to try to make them better in combination, but what are some new therapies that are coming down the pike? And then we concluded the 2022 Pan-Pacific Lymphoma Conference. And I hope this overview, not only for me, has stirred up some potential future blood club visits, whether it be faculty in academia, whether or not it be faculty in the community on how they utilize some of these drugs in their clinic. But with the last drop of this inaugural Blood Club gathering, I, Matthew Lunning, as a facilitator, want to let you know that I thought that this was one of the best Pan Pacific Lymphoma Conference with regards to faculty presentations, engagement of the audience, and lastly, what I call a little bit of communication. A little bit of fun, a little bit of laughter leads to a lot of education. And I think that this is where we can go, and this is where I hope we continue to flow within the Blood Club. And with that, everybody have a great day.